Good morning, and it is Thursday. Kind of a chilly one, too, for like the first full day of spring, huh? But anyway, we will have warmer weather yet to come because, after all, this is Tallahassee, right? And welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for being part of the conversation, of which you are always welcome to be a part of at 414-1234, our local number. Long distance, it's 800-926-8809. Perspectives at WFSU.org, or you can send us a tweet at WFSUPerspective. Well, every single person ever born on this planet has a history, and maybe we first become aware of that when, as little kids, we're asked, whose little girl or whose little boy are you? And then later we trace our lineage through grandparents and great-grandparents, and then we hear family stories of who married whom, and that extends further and further back into the recesses of time. And then we hear tales of the old country and when our ancestors came to the place where we are today. And for some of us, that exercise, although it can be challenging, is often accompanied by many generations of documentation, in addition to all the oral tradition that we hear from relatives and all. But for many folks, the evidence, particularly in the time before U.S. enslavement, may be considerably tougher to come by. But the layers of that onion are being peeled back as well. Everyone wants to know where they came from. I think that is kind of a basic human right. And if you think back to things like Roots, the 1976 novel by Alex Haley that turned into that landmark TV series in the 80s, and then over on PBS, you had educator Henry Louis Gates Jr., and that program Finding Your Roots, that was really fascinating. And then all the Discover Your History enterprises like 23andMe and the genealogy websites that you can surf to your heart's content. And now the amazing success of the movie Black Panther and its strong connection to a vibrant and powerful African culture and history. Well, we're going to talk about all that and more here this morning on Perspectives. And so we welcome to these microphones an old friend, Bill Lohman, frequent contributor to Tallahassee's ongoing discussion of HBCUs and the connection between all of us and the need for us to recognize the greater us that is out there. And Bill, you're writing, you're speaking, you're doing all kinds of stuff right now, staying busy as always.
Yes, absolutely. Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, thank you for suggesting the topic, and this is something that I've wanted to delve into for quite a while, and you're making it possible. And you brought along telephonically a subject matter expert of great renown, Dr. Anthony Dixon, assistant professor and archivist at Bethune-Cookman University, with a connection back here to Rattlerville, Florida A&M University, as a student, also as an instructor, and with the John G. Riley Museum and the Florida African American Heritage Preservation Network, and also TCC. So it is good to talk to you, Dr. Dixon, and thank you for being part of Perspectives today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Dixon, if we could start with you here, let's talk about that history, because the one thing that we have heard through numerous folks, when it comes to tracing the all those eras, those centuries before American enslavement, how academically, how do you find out a history that is based so intrinsically on oral tradition? How do you unpack that as an academic?
Well, we use those oral histories as our base for research, but we are always trying to find other pieces of material culture and other significant items that will kind of bolster the stories, because like we always know, we always played the game when we were young. Teachers would play the game with us where they would whisper something to someone, and then by the time it gets around the classroom, it's something totally different. And so we understand that oral histories are solid resources, but they need to be bolstered. They need to be supported by other documentation. So the issue is we start with those oral histories and those oral traditions, and then we rely on archaeology and anthropology and the other disciplines to help finish putting the complete story together.
So it really turns into an exercise in detective work then?
Yes. We take those oral histories, we take the information, we look at those pertinent and key aspects of it, and then we try to find other pieces of history and other pieces of material culture that will support those statements.
Okay, Bill Lohman, from your perspective here, as we said in the outset, it is important that everyone have a history, and a lot of Americans from various cultures, I can't trace mine back more than I think six generations, and mine drops right off the map because, as Dr. Dixon said, you have to have some documentation, some independent verification to go along with the oral tradition, and that can be very difficult to find sometimes.
It can be, but I think that has a lot to do with a misperception of history. There is a book called When We Ruled by Robin Walker, which represents 90,000 years of African history. One of the sources is a source of tens of thousands of written documents in Timbuktu, which was an ancient university that was a center of education for the world. And there are various African civilizations that have written documentation. So if we go to people like Robin Walker and his book, we're going to find that written documentation and written histories still exist. And as Dr. Dixon said, archaeologically, there is plenty of evidence that still remains. All throughout the museums in Europe are evidence of smelting and ironwork and tremendous artwork. Ancient artwork of African peoples.
And how do scientific advancements like DNA research, Dr. Dixon, how does that help in this entire enterprise of trying to find the answer to that elemental question, where did I come from?
Well, the issue is everyone, as we just discussed earlier, everyone wants to know where they came from, who they are, and what larger forces and things they are a part of. And so in that quest, it starts personally, but it always ends up in a community aspect. Because once you begin to do your search, and usually people start with genealogy and finding their own lineage, and things of that nature, they understand the larger entities that they are tied to. And once they begin to tie themselves to those larger entities, then we begin to look at how groups of people have had migratory patterns, work patterns, cultural, whether it's cooking techniques, or any basket weaving techniques, all of these different things go on to make that community's culture. But that person starts individually and then ends up finding themselves part of that larger community.
So these little drops of individual water then flow into the streams that flow into the river that become this great overarching culture. And Bill Lohman, that's something that I know you have talked about in many of your essays there, how these individuals contribute to that larger culture, not just African-American culture, but American culture in general.
Right. The opportunity for us to really expand the way in which we understand how our history impacts us goes beyond academics. I am an initiated priest in the Afro-Cuban Lukumi system. And one of the streams of information that continues to come forward from the past for African people is spirituality, is the spirit of our ancestors and the spirit of all of this work and effort that our people have put into the world. And much of the actual vehicle or carrier for that spirit is the music, is the dance, is the way in which we speak. You know, you have ministers who on Sunday or if they're Martin Luther King or Malcolm, you know, as they speak socially and publicly, literally are projecting a spirit, an ancient spirit, through the rhythm and the cadence with which they convey their ideas.
And we even see this in such things as, I'm thinking, music. A few weeks ago in this very room, we had a discussion of that ancient American musical form called the blues and what its roots were going back rhythmically, melodically, all of that to a much more distant past. Beyond America, into Africa, which is where that came from, and still gets revitalized to this day.
Right. And that music literally carries information within it, within the spirit of that music, how it affects the person, the people who hear it, and the way in which you feel. There are people who felt that feeling 10,000 years ago.
And that's the direct connection between the present and the past in a very visceral way that you can actually detect
right.
and take part in.
Right.
We are talking about Black history and history in general, all of our histories here on Perspectives, and you're invited to be part of that conversation at 414-1234. And in today's wonderful cellularly interconnected world, that's an 850 area code, boys and girls. Or you can send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org is that address. And we'll be back in just a few moments to continue our conversation with Bill Lohman and Dr. Anthony Dixon. Don't go away. Welcome back to Perspectives as we're talking about African history and American history and personal and cultural. A lot of history going on here this morning at 414-1234, 800-926-8809. And a reminder, you can always find the show online at WFSU.org. Just go to WFSU and click on radio. There's a little pull-down menu there in the upper left-hand corner of your screen, and you'll get programs from radio. Click Perspectives, and we archive each show. Try to have it up within 24 hours of when the program actually airs on the radio so you can go back and listen to it again and again if you missed any part of it or you just want to hear the entire thing over again. We are joined by Maria on line two. Let's get her into the conversation. Hey, Maria, welcome to Perspectives.
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful. Thanks for calling.
Good, good, good. I was listening to the conversation about oral history and all of that, and I am a Black woman, and it was always something that was said about, you know, Native American and all of that. But anyway, for years and years, I said I was going to, you know, find out all of this. So a couple of years ago, I did the 23andMe, and sure enough, actually, it was quite... most of my heritage was from West Africa, Nigeria, Jamaica. Actually, Jamaica came in, Cameroon, and Ghana. But also, I had this whole other percentage of British, Irish, Scandinavian, Native American. So that part was true. Asian, Pacific, and, you know, a lot of other things. So it was just really... quite interesting. I think that, you know, there's been like a lot of blending of culture and all of that. So it was just really interesting to find out, you know, all of that.
Did that surprise you?
Actually, no. It really didn't. Because, you know, what was so interesting is when I was telling my friends about it, they're like, well, Maria, you know, you do have almond-shaped eyes, and you know that nose kind of looks Native American, so I wasn't really surprised. It was just, you know, really interesting, you know, to find that out. And then I also had my daughter to do one, and hers was interesting as well, because she, her grandmother, you know, was from New Orleans, and so some of that came up in her DNA as well. But it was just really interesting, and I was really pleased with the results.
Well, thank you so much for sharing those, Maria. That is fascinating, and thanks for calling us here on Perspectives. Dr. Anthony Dixon, I think Maria just brought up an interesting point, particularly, and we know some folks who say, I can't stand those people, whatever those people may happen to be. And yet, if you go through the exercise that Maria did, I think most of us would find that we are those people. Does that make it more difficult for folks to hate each other, do you think?
The issue is us understanding the actual human nature of how we have moved through time. In other words, what I'm saying is cultures and people have always cohabitated and intermingled since the dawn of time. And so when we have historically used racial phenotype of characteristics just to describe someone, we're actually using a common fallacy, because no one can really say that they are of some pure origin. No one can really say that their family throughout time has never gone through that cohabitation or that intermingling or commingling process. So then I guess we then start looking at the issues of culture and whether we have these ideas of nature versus nurture, right? Whether or not those issues in which we were raised in the community and the value and the culture which we were raised in actually have a more significant factor than the actual physical characteristic that we have that we basically had no control over.
And how as an academic do you think that the past informs the present and sets the plate, if you will, for the future in all of our lives? How does that happen?
It is very important, because we have to recognize the fact that there really is nothing new under the sun. That if we do not learn our history and learn from our history, then we really are doomed to repeat the mistakes of the past. And I always like to use a much broader example, but it hits home. When Napoleon tried to take over the world, one of his final and his biggest mistake was that he tried to cross Russia in the midwinter, and you cannot cross Russia in winter. And so he ultimately failed, and of course Napoleon's imperialistic ideas kind of faltered and all of that good stuff. Now, you fast forward into the 1930s, 1940s, we see Hitler trying to do the exact same thing, that Hitler has gone into war, and the main advocate at this point is Russia, and he makes the exact same mistake, that he tries to cross Russia in the dead of winter. And so I use that example of not understanding and not learning your history and how you are doomed to repeat the failures of the past. And so we really do. If we do not look at our history, we do not recognize things. Just like another pertinent aspect. I try to get African Americans to understand that we have not been out of slavery as long as we were in slavery. Therefore, there are still some things that we do that is tied to slave culture. There are still things that African Americans do. And so we have to recognize those things, and we have to recognize those things in larger society that we still do, that we can tie back to something or some part of the community's culture in a different time period. And so if we do not recognize these things, then we're doomed to repeat the failures of the past.
Oh, and I think, Bill Lohman, I remember you talking about that, too, in another one of your essays, to give the lie to those folks who say, well, just get over it. That was in the past. It has no relevance to the present right now, and yet it is very much alive and very much influencing a lot of the ongoing relationships we have interracially and interculturally in this country.
Right. And it's so very, very important that we understand that there is no such thing as past, present, and future. We all live in time, and time is not divided by some piece of cardboard and a box. Time is time. And as Dr. Dixon says, if we incorporate that time and that understanding with misinformation, then we are going to repeat those same mistakes. One of the reference books that I specifically wanted to share with you is one by a woman. She's actually an attorney, Jacqueline Batalora. And she wrote a book called Birth of a White Nation. And essentially, this is the documentation of when people in power in this country, in Jamestown, decided that they needed to create something called white people. Prior to that, there were Europeans, there were Africans, there were Chinese. You know, people were German or Polish or Irish or Scottish, but they were not white people. So if we do not understand why that creation was made, what that is about, then we will continue to repeat these things. You know, science has told us that there is no such thing as races within the human family. There's only one human race. And for African Americans and the institutions like HBCUs, we need to understand that as a people, we have had these HBCUs for 150 years. But African people did not come into educational institutions just 150 years ago. We literally founded the very first human educational system in Kemet tens of thousands of years ago, and have had enormous experience, information, and understanding that we are not tapping into to create HBCUs that really can be much more magnificent than they already are. If you like barbecue and gumbo and blues, then you would definitely enjoy what an HBCU would create if they actually did this creation out of that African essence. Right now, we are trapped in a Western academic model of creating the future of African Americans in this country and around the world. And we need to come out of that, not out of anger or animosity, but in the interest of being authentic African people and creating what we create, because the world loves what African people create when we do it out of our own authenticity.
And Dr. Dixon, we're seeing that demographically because this country is changing. The demographics of America are going in a different direction than what Bill said. The so-called white America is now becoming a much more polychromatic America than it had been in the past? And how do you get, I guess, more of the society at large to appreciate and understand what everybody brings to that table, regardless of cultural background and history?
Well, the first thing we have to do is, like he said earlier, get rid of the cardboard, get rid of the boxes, and understand the fluidity of American society. In other words, we have to understand and begin to think in the ideas that Native American history, African American history, Asian American history is all still American history, that we are all interwoven through different events. If you look at different major events in the country or different things that have moved in terms of cities and geographical places, it is all still a multicultural aspect to it. In other words, the problem has been that minority cultures and minorities have been largely left out of telling the entire story. But now, as we move toward a more multicultural society, we began to get larger society to listen to those stories and understand and look at those major events from a different perspective. And so when you begin to do those things, then you really start moving toward diversity and multiculturalism, because then they understand the whole story, not from just one side that has been told majority for most of America's history. And so the issue is getting those stories out there and understanding those stories. And then the next step then is to make those cultural connections. And that also goes back to what we were just talking about earlier in terms of looking at African people as a diaspora, that African Americans themselves have to stop looking at ourselves as being American in the box outside, that there are issues, there are things historically that African descendants as a whole have experienced. And there are still things. There are things now that African descendants around the world are experiencing. So when we share those stories and we share those experiences, then we begin to kind of move toward a more congruent society, a more cohesive society. So then when you narrow that focus down to America and to the United States, it's African Americans' duty to continue to tell their own story, to give their side of the story and their perspective of these different events and places, so that we can have an overall understanding of the American story and American traditions. We have traditions that come from a multitude of cultures, but it still has become an American tradition. And so when we start recognizing that everyone has contributed to the American tradition, then we start beginning to change the mindset.
850-414-1234. That's the number here for Perspectives. And let's hook up with Jeanette, who's on the line right now. Hi, Jeanette. Thanks for calling. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I understand the new census that will come out will allow people of African descent to delineate whether they're from the Caribbean, from Haiti, Cuba, wherever. And I just wanted to get your understanding or take on that, given the current administration. Will that be to our advantage or our detriment?
Oh, my, what a fascinating question that is. Thanks, Jeanette. What do you think, Bill Lohman?
Well, you know, that really depends on us. There's a long story I won't go into, but it does not always have to be something that happens to us. You remember there's a joke about there are three kinds of people in the world: people who make things happen, people who watch things happen, and people who say, "What happened?" And the thing is, we have to understand that, yes, there are bad actors in the world, but we are also actors in the world. So what that represents may be someone's ill intention, but that does not preclude the fact that we have the ability to get in there and mix it up also. One of the things Dr. Dixon talked about in terms of our interpretation, the African-American interpretation of history, one way in which I think about this whole Jim Crow era is almost like it was an anti-Marshall Plan, right? After World War II, there was this Marshall Plan to restore Europe and Japan to, something that was functional and able to support human life. But the Jim Crow policies that followed enslavement or Reconstruction literally was like an anti-Marshall Plan, in that it limited and curated African American growth and development to some very small, uncomfortable situation. And so at this point, we need to really look at who we are. Are we really who we say we are? And are we all we need to be?
We're going to talk some more here, and I want to get Dr. Dixon's take on that, too, here on Perspectives. And we are talking about African history, American history, all of our histories. And 850-414-1234 is the number that you can call to join in the conversation or send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. And we will be right back. Back on Perspectives, and thank you so much for being a part of it here as we talk about various and sundry histories. And Dr. Anthony Dixon, if you're just joining us, assistant professor and archivist at Bethune-Cookman University, but with a very strong and deeply abiding Tallahassee connection through Florida A&M and TCC and everywhere else. Miss you up here, Dr. Dixon, but what do you think of that, the census subdividing that category of black into whether it's African or Caribbean or any of the other potential places where black folks can come from? Useful? Not so much? What do you think?
Well, I think you have to look at it from two different perspectives. There's the theoretical and then the practical. The theoretical is that I think it would be a positive thing that people get to identify themselves a little bit more and get to kind of break down some of those rigid barriers based just on, well, not just on, but majority based on race. And so theoretically, that is a good thing that people are being able to be identified. And it also kind of goes back to reversing the trend set back in Jamestown of defining whiteness and then whiteness and others. And so the practical application is I'm concerned on how we use the census in terms of how taxpaying dollars are given out and placed into different communities for community redevelopment and things of that nature. And so we know that they use the census purely by numbers in terms of groups and areas and regions and things of that nature. So on the theoretical side of it, I think it's a good thing that people are able to identify and kind of break down some of those barriers set by race. But on the same token, the practical side of it is when they start talking about doing things for various communities, they are going to begin to use these census. So if you have a number and you want to look at yourself just as, I guess for lack of a better term right off the top of my head, if you want to be declared and recognized as a Jamaican American, then the issue there then becomes how large is that Jamaican American community, and what are the practical aspects of how they are going to use the numbers for that Jamaican American community in terms of community redevelopment and things of that nature. So it's a two-edged sword there. Theoretically, I think it's great. On the practical terms, we have to look at how those divisions are going to be utilized in order to really assess whether or not it's a good thing moving forward.
Sure. It all gets back to that old critical question, to what purpose then, huh?
Right.
Exactly. Because if we're talking about, as we have done on the practical side in the past, in the history of the country, that means that if we start going into these smaller groups and trying to assess dynamics of these different communities on a smaller and more finite scale, then the issue then becomes how much can they really get if they compare themselves to the other larger communities. So that's just something that we would have to look at, and it would have to be fluid as well. We would have to see to what end, again, like you just said, with having these greater divisions on the census, how will that help those individuals and those people's communities? Whether or not specifics will be a positive thing or in the long run be more detrimental. We would only have to be able to do research and actually look. I would say it would take at least, three censuses to actually get a good idea of how the practical aspect of using this information really works.
Yeah, that's a very much in the news right now. How is data being used? Critical question for all of us here. I'm flashing back to something that our caller Maria said earlier in the program when she went through the 23andMe exercise and found out the vast diversity in her own personal background. And I'm just thinking, and Bill and Dr. Dixon, I'll run it by both of you here, that by the criteria of the old Jim Crow South, given the diversity in all of our personal backgrounds, regardless of the amount of melatonin in your skin, it would seem that most, if not all of us, by the one drop of blood rule, could be considered black.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, the real problem is the use of those terms, black and white. And even though the Greeks called African people in Africa Ethiopians, which meant burnt face people, the term black, that we are black, is someone looking at you, right? And this whole idea of white people is a propaganda creation of people who had a political and economic agenda in this country, which they have been continually working. But the real issue that has been raised is, how do we go forward as a democracy, right? Are we obligated to just be victimized by the machinations and agenda of whoever? Do we need to beef up the idea that human beings should be priority over profit, priority over power, and priority over, someone's agenda at manipulation and divide and conquer. That is a very, very old tactic that was being used by the British before they ever left Europe. They used it on the Scottish and the Irish. But we have to really take into our own hands again, if we ever had it, I'm there's this ongoing debate about whether we are still in a democracy or whether we live in an oligarchy, you know, with all of the wealth that this country has created and it being in the hands of so few people. But we have to really take a look at the fact that if, in fact, you know, we live in America and we live in the greatest democracy on the planet, as keeps being said, we have work to do. And the citizen, you know, each citizen has an obligation to not just vote and pay taxes. We have work to do. We have to get the work done.
Yeah, well, what are your thoughts, Dr. Dixon?
I was going to say, I wanted to ask you that. I think you hit on a very good point there. We can discuss and we can talk about differences among people all day. That's something that we can physically look at, we can physically see, right? We can see with skin tone, we can see with nose size, lip size, bone structure, all of those things we should look at, right? And we can actually notice the differences, but the problem is that we have historically put those differences in categories of superiority and inferiority.
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't put those differences in those categories, then we would be much better. We could recognize the fact that cultures are different. People do different things with their culture. We can recognize even physical features that are different, and eyes, nose, lips, all of those different things. The problem is we must stop putting them in the categories of a superiority and inferiority. You see, because I'm only 5'5", and my friend may be 6'1". You see, we can recognize and we physically see the differences, the fact that my height versus theirs. The problem is when we start saying that one person is more of a better human being because they are taller or because they are shorter, vice, however the case may be. You see, it's those categories that we must get away from. And those categories have been bolstered by these false ideologies about people. And that stems back to the earlier conversation we just had about having more knowledge of different people, their background, their history, and their culture. And that's how we begin to really break down those barriers. And we can stop looking at things in terms of superiority and inferiority because we are putting those two categories and assigning them to people all the time. And I give you a good example. We've now gotten to the point where if something is of less quality, we automatically have began to start calling it ghetto.
Mm-hmm.
And ghetto has been synonymous with the African-American community for years now, at least since the 50s. So really, when you think about it, it's really back in the 20s and 30s when you start looking at Harlem and places like that during and just after the Great Migration. But the issue is, any time now we see something that seems like it's of inferior quality or inferior behavior, that some type of behavior we don't accept, we will throw that term on it. And then that term synonymously gets associated with African Americans. So the concept and the point that I'm trying to get to bring it all to a circle is there's nothing wrong with recognizing the differences in people. The problem is we must stop putting them in the categories of superiority and inferiority. And I want to touch on one other thing. You see it, and I have to say this because I've been on this soapbox for a couple of years now. You are correct in terms of us questioning, Bill, whether or not we're living in a democracy or an oligarchy. We all know that Athenian democracy, which is the democracy we've always lived under, it always had the tendency to become an oligarchy. And so we have seen an oligarchy in this country before. We had the Southern oligarchy that pretty much lasted for 100 years. So I think we need to, as a people, whether you're black, white, whatever, all American citizens really need to examine our government and where we are headed, you know, in terms of our relationship with the government. Because I am convinced that we are on the road to oligarchy in certain areas. We are. And so I won't go too far into that, because then I get on my soapbox with the gerrymandering and all of that good thing, all those things that I think are tools to creating an oligarchical society. So I won't go into that too much further. But I think you are absolutely right, Bill. We are. We have to decide, are we really in a democracy? Are we going to remain and get back to being a strong democracy, or are we going to stay on this road to oligarchy?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the other side of the coin, Dr. Dixon, is that you have, based on a concept by really a bunch of old white guys a long time ago, a form of government that depended on the participation of, at that time, a fairly limited group of people, mm-hmm. which we have now expanded to take in all the people, which was actually their phrase, not ours.
Right.
But it only works if that is true.
Right. And there's a YouTube video called Harvesting Intangible Assets. And I viewed this video. It's a TED Talk, actually. Thinking about HBCUs, but it really is pertinent to this conversation about whether we are going to function as a democracy or not, and whether the citizens of this democracy will take advantage of this opportunity. In Harvesting Intangible Assets, he talks about creating something from our refuse, you know, the things that people throw away, the things that people allow to rot on the vine, and taking them and creating wealth and opportunity. One of the examples he gave was the guy who created Starbucks. He said this man didn't invent coffee. He didn't even invent coffee shops. What is he doing with all this money? How did he do that? But he harvested an intangible asset. And as citizens in this country, we need to begin to look at harvesting intangible assets.
And realize that we are the primary asset in this country.
Absolutely.
Everyone, because
Absolutely.
It's not them and us. It's all us.
We're all us.
The gentleman, the hour has just whizzed right by, and let me give you a chance, Dr. Dixon, any final thoughts here in the minute or so that we have remaining, sir, from you?
Oh, final thought. Okay, my final thought I would like to leave with our listeners is that we must start moving and understanding, moving toward the concept and understanding the concept that African American history, Asian American history, Latin American history, it is all American history, that there is no separation. We cannot continue to move forward as a multicultural society, not just diverse, but multicultural as well, if we continue to keep those same rigid lines that have been historically black and white, that we have to understand that American culture can no longer just be synonymous with white American culture, that it never really was, but now we must recognize that and govern ourselves accordingly. So understand that, again, African American history, Latin American, Asian American history, it is all American history.
From the man, Dr. Anthony Dixon, assistant professor and archivist at Bethune-Cookman University. And Bill Lohman, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your thoughts and expertise, your wisdom, your writings, and we hope to see you again real soon.
Thank you very much. Anytime.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance for WFSU from Taylor Cox today. Lydell Rawls on the phones and internet connections. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, Perspectives takes a break as we'll be in the midst of our spring pledge drive. We hope you'll help support great programs like Perspectives through your generosity. And in 2 weeks, we'll continue our historical trek by focusing on the iconic Florida Capitol, the old Capitol in downtown Tallahassee, a building that came very close to having a date with a Wreckers Ball 40 years ago. We'll talk then.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.